Welcome back to Cairo Nights. Stacey Jo Rost is on the line. Stacey Jo Rost, a.k.a. scaring Jack Stein again for no reason whatsoever. No reason, Stacey. No reason whatsoever. I'm here. I'm minding my own business. I'm preparing for the segment. I'm waiting for you to connect. And then, boom, out of nowhere, you pop up in my headphones and you yell Jack Stein as loud as you possibly can in my headphones and you spook me. I'm spooked.
I'm really good at scaring people. It's being a small person. It's something I excel at. I've always been good at it. I pop up out of places. I remember one time asking a player who was very tall if I could interview him. And, yes. And because I kind of popped up from behind him, I think he almost choked on food that he was eating. Like, it's the closest I've come to almost killing someone.
So, Stacey Jo Rost, you and I are from the same generation. We're from that George W. Bush, Obama, kind of growing up in an era of war and combat and low-waisted jeans and Mandy Moore. And
All related things.
It's
a flashback to my brain right now. A Walk to Remember, the war, all of these things.
Yes. The Notebook. Do you remember the name Spencer Pratt? Do you remember this name?
Absolutely. Do I remember the name Spencer Pratt? I currently follow Spencer Pratt on Twitter and Instagram for some reason.
So when you and I were Utes, there was a show that I'm just letting the audience know that was called The Hills. Now, it was originally called Orange County, correct?
Laguna Beach. OC? Laguna Beach.
Yeah, it was originally called Laguna Beach. And it followed a bunch of very wealthy, very beautiful young people, including Caitlyn Jenner's son, amongst others. I think even the Kardashians appeared in a couple of episodes. And then when they graduated from high school, they moved from that scene to the Hills, meaning the Hollywood Hills. And it followed, again, a cast of very good looking, albeit very stupid people. And we would watch these people basically live their lives, but in many ways it was scripted, highbrow reality television. The shots were always very crystal clear. It wasn't like it wasn't like Survivor. It wasn't like Amazing Race. This was low light, natural lighting, beautiful people talking about.
It was so good, though. There are so many iconic moments. Lauren saying, "I want to forgive you and I want to forget you.
Oh, yes.
Injected into my veins.
Okay. So this was this is like the definition of high intensity television. Very wealthy, very good looking people. Living lives that we could never possibly hope to live. Now, I saw a headline today in my Reddit feed this morning when I woke up. It says Spencer Pratt says idiot castmates are sinking the Hills reboot. And I thought to myself, I remember what Spencer Pratt looks like. I remember what Audrina looks like. I remember what Lauren looks like. In my mind's eye, these are all beautiful young people who are very fit and who are just glowing and radiant and so on and so forth. And then Stacey Jo Rost, I click on the picture and I see a bunch of alcoholic, totally drained, totally aged people, and my world has been shattered and I no longer want to live.
It's awful because you realize Spencer Pratt is almost 40.
He is almost 40 years old, and yet he still talks and acts like he's 18 years old. This is like, I can only equate it to somebody who, you know, let's say you were a big Frank Sinatra fan back in the day, and you go, oh, yeah, I remember. And now all of a sudden it's 1970, and you go, oh, yeah, I remember Frank Sinatra. Super good looking, super dashing, super charming. What does he look like in 1975? And he's this alcoholic, bloated, wrinkly, smoked way too many cigarettes, been up way too many nights, and he's ruined. And now I have to look at myself in the mirror, Stacey Jo Rost.
It's really important that we stress that. What it is you look at celebrities and where they are that you watched growing up, and what you really do is just flip that mirror and look back at yourself, and you realize, oh, I was a teenager when I was watching this person be a teenager, and now that this person is almost 40, I'm almost 40. And it doesn't have to be that age range. It could be, you know, you use the Frank Sinatra one. It could be all of a sudden being like, oh my God, God, I remember when Rambo was the hottest movie ever. And now I'm looking at this man who was like this, you know, sex symbol during whatever time Rambo was a thing. I've never actually seen Rambo Rocky.
That's okay.
But my understanding is that, see, this is doing the same thing. My understanding is that Sylvester Stallone, super hot. But I only know like older Sylvester Stallone. And I will add to this, Jack. I had a similar brush with mortality, my own mortality today, when we had he's not an intern. He's just a very young employee. They do make employees of this age.
Very young.
He was born in 1998.
No.
And he sat in with our producer today.
No.
We were just peppering him with questions like, have you ever heard of a Walkman? Have you ever heard of TRL? You ever heard, like, he didn't know what TRL was.
No.
He had never heard of Carson Daly.
No.
He didn't know any of these things. Like, I would bet my life savings he's never heard of Laguna Beach in his life.
So,
or if I say Lauren Conrad, he's going to be like, is that a Kohl's? Kohl's line? I've seen her at Kohl's.
Is that like Slacks? I really like Lauren Conrad's Slacks.
Lauren Conrad.
These are names that I have not heard in years. Heidi Montag. Oh, man.
Kristen Cavallari, who now most people just know is what's his name's ex-wife?
Yeah. Yeah.
Jay Cutler.
This is like, for me, back in high school, I can remember on Thursdays during break in high school, we would all huddle around the little snack shack outside of my high school, and we would talk about what we witnessed the night before on the hills and on Laguna Beach. And we would discuss with great passion what was going on with Heidi, what was going on with LC.
I love that for you.
Was LC really in love with, I think it was Brody, right?
What a name.
God, was she in love with Brody? And then when Brody got that hand tattoo, it was a super big deal for us all. We were like, oh, he'll never have a career after this because he's got a hand tattoo. And then Spencer was always getting drunk and he was so mean to Heidi. And we were always talking about who, like, the guys would kind of circle off and would be like, I'm totally into Lauren. And then other people were like, I'm totally into Heidi. And we would have these deep philosophical conversations about it. And now they're all burnouts, Stacey. They're all alcoholic burnouts, and my life is ruined.
You know what's weird, though, is the same thing. I have to remind myself of this.
Yeah.
This sounds ridiculous to anyone who is younger than 25 or older than 45. If you are outside of that age group, you either don't understand aging yet because you're too young,
right,
or you are aging and have a very mature, normal view of aging because you recognize that, like, that's how life works. Anyone
right
in the middle is where we are, where you're just having an existential crisis by watching, like, what I did the other day, which is like a broadcast of a 2007 football game, and I was like, what? This should be in black and white. What's happening?
Yeah.
But what I realized, I was just recently watching a reality show, Love Island. I love it. I would do one of these interviews exclusively on Love Island, and we should. And a lot of the contestants are early 20s. And as I was watching, I was thinking, so many of the same things they like are things that we consume just in different flavors. Like, there's still the same stars, only their Lauren Conrad is like a YouTube star or a TikTok star.
Right.
And there's still all of the same stuff. And I had to remind myself that, like, hey, reminder, everyone ages. Everyone gets older.
Yeah. Do you think that our fixation with mortality is, in ignoring mortality, and I don't mean you and I, but Americans in general, our refusal to acknowledge death as a thing.
I think death is exceptionally scary because I think there's a fear of not knowing what happens when you die and having literally no control over it. Death is an exceptionally scary principle. I think that that's somewhat separate. I think a fear of death is so incredibly common, but somewhat separate from an obsession with youth and aging.
Ooh.
I think those two things aren't always the same. I think as a society, as humans, fearing death is normal. As a society, and this isn't unique to the U.S., but as a society, we place so much value on youth that we create such an unhealthy relationship with aging.
Yeah, I actually, so Sarah and I were talking the other day about, I have to be really delicate with this, someone who's in kind of one of our peripheral circle of friends. They're a couple years younger than I am. but they've already started to get work done in certain areas of their face, and it is now becoming an unhealthy obsession, because the last time we spoke with this person, it was, well, my eyelids are baggy. Their eyelids are not baggy. They look like normal, you know, 29, 28-year-old person's eyelids, under eyes. And they go, I'm going to get this technique done where they remove a piece of your skin and stretch it down. And I was like, yeah, you know, how much is that going to cost? Oh, it's going to cost me like $7,500. And I'm thinking, you know, you're going to start racking this up, and it's going to become this obsession of what bits and pieces of myself am I not okay with? For example, Stacey Jo Ross, I have unusually large earlobes. They're unusually large. The bottom lobe is thick. It's a dense lobe. I want you to think of, and it's almost about the size of a penny. Is it unsightly? Okay. No. Is it weird? Not really. But to me, I look like Dumbo. To me, I look like a monstrosity, and I need to.
Dumbo was a hero, first of all.
To me,
he saved so many people in that circus. But
I think that all too often we are trying to do this like fountain of youth type thing.
Yes.
And I think to myself, if only I could roll back the time clock to 7 years ago when I had all my teeth. Maybe, you know, that then I will be finally happy with myself. But that's.
Well, and it's like, why do we focus on this fleeting time? Like, no one thinks, well, a lot of people should, but like 30 is still young. Your 40s are still young. Why are we thinking like, oh, I wish I could look how I did when I was 25? So there's a 5-year window in which everything about you is acceptable. What is this?
Yeah. And I think that, again, looking at Spencer Pratt and looking at all these, again, I can't, when I'm looking at these pictures, I'm just like, what happened to these poor people? You know, that's so rough. But I'm like, what happened to these people? Like, is it that we value youth to such a degree that now this idea of, like, me at 32 years old, I've got a salt and pepper beard, I've got gray around the temples, that now when I've almost overvalued it to the extent where I'm fetishizing it, and I want these characters again to be 20 something years old, when in actuality no one really wants to be 20 something years old. Most people want to be our age. Like, most people want to be in their 30s and a little wiser and have a little bit of money
in
the bank.
That's the thing. You're so much more confident. You have more disposable income. Like, the 30s, 40s, 50s, like, that's where it's at. And I think that we, in short, I think that what you see when, you know, you, Jack Stein, look up Spencer Pratt or any random celebrity is someone who is in the same part of their life and wondering about aging or potentially fearing aging, but then has the disposable income to try to address it. And then you see like this physical manifestation of trying to stop aging. And I think I was having a conversation with a friend of mine who has deep kind of frustrations and struggles with aging, specifically as a woman. She feels like there's just this kind of
I
completely relate to her. I think there have literally been times when for instance, I recently just opened up my dating apps again. I was off of them for a year because I wasn't going to date during COVID, and then COVID went on forever. So I open up one of my apps, right? I sign back up, I go look at some of the matches I've gotten. Jack, not one single match that I had was a man younger than 37. I am 32 years old, but like no match was anyone my age. And I think that it, instead of just thinking like, oh, I've had this for 24 hours, my immediate thought was, oh, no man wants to date me because I'm 32. Like, what a toxic, horrible thought. But like, that's that kind of preoccupation you have with it.
Wait, Stacey, this is a good, this is a really good, this is really good. This is great radio. How many dating apps do you have, if you don't mind me asking?
Right now I have one. So normally I would have Hinge and Bumble. Bumble is, you have to have some confidence to have Bumble. As anyone who uses it or has used it knows, the person who opens an account as a identifying as a woman has to make the first move. For the first time in my life, I had to deal with like, oh, this is rejection. Like, this is what it is. Because I never approach anyone. I never do. Not that people approach me, but I'm just saying, I don't really dabble too much into Like, the dating apps are weird. So I do Hinge right now, just Hinge. So I had, again, I had Hinge up. I go in to look at it, and I'm thinking, let's see what we got, Stace. Let's get back out there, get back on that horse, go back into dating. And what I see are like, oh, no one your age is interested in people their age.
Stacey, here's you got to take my word on this.
It was devastating.
You got to take my advice on this, and you're going to hate this advice, but this is, Stacey, you and I have been working, hold on, let me do one of these. Stacey, you and I have been working together for a very long time.
And I knew it.
I feel like I have a pretty good picture of the kind of guy that you would be most comfortable with, and me saying this is meant to be for your benefit. And if you don't like my advice, that's okay, and it won't affect our friendship because I care about you as a person, and it comes from a place of concern and compassion, and I hope you can accept my thought on who I think you should date.
Okay, I'm ready.
I think you gotta find a dude who's like 40 years old, 40, 42 years old, who is an entrepreneur, who has his own thing going on. I think you gotta find a guy who's a man's man. I think that if you date some 35-year-old loser who's some like junior corporate executive or whatever, you're gonna get burnt out. You gotta find a man's man who's on flights and he's going places and he's got his own life and he's got his own stuff going on so that you can have quality time watching true crime. Mm-hmm. And have that not
doing important things.
Doing important things, watching the Mariners, so on and so forth, so that you can actually get away from, you got to have space is what I'm saying, Stacey Jo Ross.
Now, here is my problem with that, Jack. The problem that I think some younger people, let's say anyone in their early 30s or late 20s will encounter if they're looking for someone who's 10 years older is that 10 years older jump is sometimes when people want to start families or get married or get serious.
Yeah.
You might be in two very different, states of your life. Like a 45-year-old might be looking for like, hey, I would like to get married and have a child. And meanwhile, if you're 29, you're like, oh, I'm 29, which isn't I know a ton. Literally, it's like wedding season for me this year. I'm going to like three different weddings.
What?
But there's still a good portion of people in their early 30s that don't have kids yet or aren't eager to start like in the next 11 months.
Yeah. And that is a conversation we're going to have that. Stacey Jo, this is our last show of the week because tomorrow I'm doing the show with Mr. John Curley. So unfortunately,
so sad.
Yeah, I know. I'm not gonna hold on. We've got to do one of these. Stacey, okay. I just feel like we do a good job every week, and I just want to thank you for coming on the show as per usual.
Thanks.
And having spicy hot takes about Heidi Montag and LC and Brody Jenner and Spencer,
and dating people your age
and we appreciate you so much here on Cairo Night, Stacey Jo Ross. Thanks, Stacey. We got to take a really quick break. When we get back, we're going to get into some mailbag, and it's a good one tonight. We'll be right back after this. Going to do mailbag, but I decided to scrap the whole thing because I thought it would be good for us to talk about Joe Biden. I thought it'd be really good if we just kind of sat down and had a nice chat about President Joe Biden in a way that was accessible for people and palatable for people so that we all are on the same page when it comes to the President of the United States. So Joe Biden has a press conference last night. He has a town hall, basically. It's him, it's Don Lemon, and they are throwing out questions to the sitting president of the United States. And it is so uncomfortable to watch. And it is so difficult to watch because you see that Biden is in clear cognitive decline. You can see that Joe Biden mentally, his faculties are eroding really, really quickly. And when I think about it as a political pundit and when I think about it as kind of a political commentator, it would be really easy for me to go out of my way to make fun of Joe Biden and to poke fun at Joe Biden and to poke fun at the Biden administration. But at this point, I'm coming now more so as a concerned citizen. I'm coming at it from the angle that I'm looking at Joe Biden as the president of the United States, as the leader of the Democrat Party, and it makes me angry that Democrats would go out of their way to put Joe Biden in a position where he could win the election solely because he had name brand recognition, not because he was a good candidate, not because he was an effective candidate, but because everybody knew the name Joe Biden. And now someone with severe cognitive issues is the president of the United States, ostensibly. Because we're going to juxtapose two clips here. One of them is from Joe Biden accepting the nomination for vice president of the United States back in 2012. And the other one is from last night. These are about 10 years apart from each other. So I think it's good to see so that people understand how far he has slipped in 10 years. Again, I don't say this to make fun of the guy. I don't say this to belittle the guy. I say this because it's sad and it makes me angry that the Democrats would do something like this to Joe Biden. Here's what that sounded like last night. He was asked, how do you change the mistrust in the system among some members of the black community? And this was his response.
You got the vaccination?
Yeah.
Are you okay? I mean, you seem, no, it works. Or you know, or the mom and dad, or the neighbor, or when you go to church, or when you're, you know, no, I really mean it. There are trusted interlocutors. Think of the people. If your kid wanted to find out whether or not there's a man on the moon or whatever, you know, something, or, you know, whether those aliens are here or not, you know, who are the people they talk to beyond the kids who love talking about it?
I mean, what was that? You know, what was that? I mean, he was asked a very clear question, right? The question very clearly was, what should we do about mistrust in the system from members of the black community? What he's talking about, interlocutors and kids talking to other kids about aliens. I get what he was trying to say. But then when I compare that answer to a speech that he gave again about 10 years ago, the difference between the two is astounding. This is President Joe Biden about 10 years ago accepting the nomination for vice president of the United States in 2012.
Tonight, what I really want to do is tell you about my friend Barack Obama.
Oh, I just want to point this out as well. He's not reading off of a teleprompter in either of these. In that first response that he is trying to give, in that first response that we just listened to where he's stuttering and stammering all over the place, he's not reading off of a teleprompter. Here, when he's giving this speech, it's clearly a rehearsed speech. But you can see how much control he has in his delivery. You can hear how much more certainty he has in his voice. And a very clear line of thought is being transmitted to the audience. Here's what that sounded like.
I know him. And I want to show you. I want to show you the character of a leader who had what it took when the American people literally stood on the brink of a new depression.
Okay, he goes on and on and on and on, and we get the idea. But again, I just want to juxtapose this for you. This is the question again from last night. So you know, so you have a frame of reference, how he sounded last night. Compare Joe Biden last night to Joe Biden 10 years ago.
You got the vaccination?
Yeah.
Are you okay? I mean, you seem, no, it works. Or you know, or the mom and dad, or the neighbor, or when
sad,
you go
know?
To church, or when
it's
you're
just really, yeah, really, really sad. And the fact that more people aren't willing to say it, I think, is probably what gets me more than anything else. It's pretty clear, right? I mean, it's pretty clear that this is someone in cognitive decline. Now, 6 months ago, all the Democrats out there, they would have said, oh, you know, Jack Stein, you're just being mean, and he had a stutter, and, you know, now he's overcome that stutter, and yeah, sure, maybe he's a little bit slower or whatever it is. Or then some other disingenuous or dishonest people would say, Jack Stein, Donald Trump was no better. He was constantly stammering and stuttering all over the place. And then other bad actors might say something like, Jack Stein, you stutter and stammer all over the place. What difference does it make? I'm not interested in talking to those people. I'm much more interested in pointing out the fact and just focusing on the subject at hand, which is that we have, you know, a president of the United States who's just not all there. He's got one too many marbles rolling around. And this is someone who shouldn't be president of the United States. And I don't mean that, again, because I'm a right-wing hack and I want Donald Trump in office and blah, 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 blah. I mean that because I care about Joe Biden, for as corrupt as he is and how corrupt he has been as a politician, I think that everyone deserves a certain amount of dignity in their lives, and this is an undignified way for Joe Biden to live. This is an undignified way for the Democrats to be treating a disabled man. And if we try to polish this up in language, we are lying to ourselves. If we try to use euphemisms to talk about Joe Biden, we are lying to ourselves. And we are doing Joe Biden and Joe Biden's family a disservice. And I won't participate in it. I won't do this thing where I go on and I put a big old smile on my face and I go, yeah, you know, President Biden and the Biden administration is doing such a great job. I disagree with their policies. But more importantly, I care that Joe Biden is being embarrassed at the national level. It bothers me. I wouldn't want to see it happen to Pelosi as much as I don't like Pelosi. I wouldn't want to see it happen to Schumer as much as I don't like Schumer. I wouldn't want to see this happen to, you know, Donald Trump or Ted. It doesn't matter to me what the person's political affiliation is. What matters to me is that they're a human being. And it doesn't give me any joy to say that Joe Biden is disabled at this point in time in his life and that he needs help, right? I don't get any kind of sick pleasure out of that. It doesn't make me feel good to come onto my show and say that the president of the United States is a feeble old man. It's not a good feeling. But I think that if we're going to be people who speak truth, and if we talk about things in truthful ways, even if you are a Democrat, you have to admit to yourself, like, yeah, you know what, man, I voted for the guy back when I thought that he was a little bit more polished, but more and more information keeps coming out. And as much as I like his policies, I don't think he can be. What I'm saying is just be honest about it. Just be honest about it and identify it for what it is. All right, we have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Shane Peterson right after this. Shane, let me share a piece of wisdom I have about life with you, Shane, because I feel like as an older dude, not that you're like a, you know, spring chicken or anything like that, but as an older dude, I've had a couple of run-ins with life, and one of the hardest things I think is for anybody out there to do, is to be an independent or dynamic individual, because most people don't like that. Most people want to fit you into a nice little neat box, and they will be as passive aggressive as they possibly can. People will attack you for thinking outside of the box. They don't like it. They want people to fit into the mold of Democrat, Republican. They want people to fit into the mold, the nice little neat mold of good guy, bad guy, that kind of thing. And so when I was just reviewing the text messages from the last segment, this is a really good one. See, all these are non-arguments, Shane, and this is how you know that you have struck a chord with people, when they don't actually address the thing that you say, but they offer you a non-argument. That's how you know that you're being dynamic and being independent, which, again, is one of the hardest things in life to do, is to stand up for the thing that you believe in and say it proudly. Not to be tepid, not to be timid, but to say it with confidence and conviction. I never say anything that I do not fundamentally believe. Never, not once. I've been doing this long enough to know that if you try to fake it on radio, if you try to fake outrage or you try to fake emotion, people can tell. And you feel it yourself. Shane, I guess it's almost like taking a shower, but you only shower like the bottom half of your body. You feel like, you feel weird afterwards. You feel like incomplete. So 425 says, in reference to Joe Biden, oh, stop. You guys on the radio love to try to convince people that Biden is in cognitive decline, and your concern for Biden is phony, cynical, and above all else, dishonest. See, that's a bad argument. That's a bad argument, Shane. And what that is that's someone who's actually being either intimidated by the idea that someone is not afraid to say that Joe Biden is in cognitive decline. 253 says, a disabled man, you care, right? Okay, Hannity, again, this is someone who is intimidated by someone who is unwilling to fit into that little box. See, if someone came on my show, Shane, the last thing that I would do, if you were a guest on my show, if you were just a caller, the last thing that I would do is to consider your argument to be in bad faith or to call you a bad actor, because you have the courage to pick up the phone and get on my show. That's why I give Billy Sunshine as much respect as I could possibly give him, Ashley Scontriano, Dr. Z, Shane, yourself. I give you all the respect in the world because I have a tremendous amount of appreciation for people who demonstrate courage. I have no appreciation for cowardice. And cowardice sounds something like this. Hey, Jack Stein, Biden is old. Old. Yep, he's old, too old. Thanks for continuing to pick the lowest hanging fruit in the news analysis orchard. Pelosi is old, too. Schumer is old, too. You and Dory should open a low-hanging fruit stand.
That's actually a pretty good
that's
one.
That's a good one. Actually, that's a you good know, one. That's a pretty sick burn for who's that, 360? 360, I'm going to give you an A-plus on that one because that one's a pretty good burn. But more importantly, Shane, I think that we should recognize that if you're a Democrat out there or if you're a Republican out there and I interact with you, you know, through email or whatever it is, I'm always going to assume that you're acting in good faith. Always. If someone comes to me with something in their life, I'm always going to assume that it's in good faith. This idea of charlatan hunting or this idea of, you know, we have to find the faker. We have to, you know, Trump used to call it the witch hunt all the time. He was kind of on to something there where people are constantly trying to find the bad act. Oh, you can't possibly mean what you say, Jack Stein. Oh, you can't possibly say what you can't possibly mean that. How could you possibly mean that? No one actually means that. It's a non-argument. It's a non-argument and it's bad. And I really want to encourage people to take what people say at face value. I do it every day of my life. Every time somebody says, I think Bernie Sanders would make a good president, I don't go, oh, yeah, you're just saying that for cool internet points. Anytime anybody comes to me and they say, I think that we should have universal health care, I never say, oh, you're just trying to get cool points for blah, 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 blah. I never do it. I go, okay, let's assess the merits of your argument on their face. Never, not once do I take the low road and just say, oh, you're just a bad actor, because that's what cowards do. If you don't want to interact with somebody, if you want to dismiss somebody, if you don't want to have to face somebody's authentic representation of the way they view the world, the first thing that you default to is you're just a bad actor. You're just a bad actor. You don't actually believe the things that you say. What do you think, Shane?
I agree with you. I mean, even yesterday, somebody who was texting in and kind of giving you a bunch of slack, and you offered them to come debate on the show, and then they backed out. Everybody likes to say really mean, hurtful stuff to us all the time, but then when we try to bring them into our little world, you know, they don't have it in them to actually go up and speak their minds. So to all you guys that send us nice messages, we thank you, and to all those with the mean messages, we thank you even more.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it just makes us feel better about ourselves and we get a good laugh out of it.
Shane, in the last 30 seconds, though, what's on your mind, boss?
I've found out that my buddies at the Clam Skate Park Committee have struck a deal with a brewery. So we might be seeing a beer here to help support the local skate park. So stay tuned, everybody.
Excellent. Okay, I will be back on Monday. Saul Spady will be in tomorrow. Shane Peterson, you are the best as per usual. Do you have any last words for us on this Thursday evening?
Just remember, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't text it to our radio show.
Yes, perfect. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Goodbye.